The president was cool, a lot cooler than me. Maybe it was all that military training. He said to me, "This is the only time for high ideals, because those ideals are all that we have. We aren't just fighting for our physical survival, but for the survival of our civilization. We don't have the luxury of old world pillars. We don't have a common heritage. We don't have millennia of history. All we have are the dreams and promises that bind us together. All we have is what we want to be." You see what he was saying? Our country only exists because people believed in it. And if it wasn't strong enough to protect us from this crisis, then what future could it ever hope to have? He knew that America wanted a Caesar, but to be one would mean the end of America. They say great times make great men. I don't buy it. I saw a lot of weakness, a lot of filth. People who should have risen to the challenge and either couldn't or wouldn't. Greed, fear, stupidity, and hate. I saw it before the war. I see it today. My boss was a great man. We were damn lucky to have him. The business of elections really set the tone for this entire administration. So many of his proposals look crazy at first glance, but once you peeled back the first layer, you realize that underneath there existed a center of irrefutable logic. Take the new punishment laws. Those really set me off. Putting people in stocks, whipping them in town squares? What was this, Old Salem? The Taliban's Afghanistan? It sounded barbaric, un-American, until you really thought about the options. What were you going to do with the thieves and looters? Put them in prison? Who would that help? Who could afford to divert active, able-bodied citizens to feed, clothe, and guard other able-bodied citizens? More importantly, why remove the punished from society when they could serve as such a valuable deterrent? Yes, there was the fear of pain, the lash, the cane, but all of that paled when compared to public humiliation. People were terrified of having their crimes exposed. At a time when everybody was pulling together, helping each other out, working to protect and take care of one another, the worst thing you could do to someone was to march them up into the public square with a giant poster reading, "I stole my neighbor's firewood." Shame's a powerful weapon, but it depended on everyone else doing the right thing. No one is above the law, and seeing a senator given 15 lashes for his involvement in war profiteering did more to curb crime than a cop on every street corner. Yes, there were the work gangs, but those were the recidivists, those who had been given chances time and time again. I remember the Attorney General suggesting that we dump as many of them into the infested zones as possible, rid ourselves of the drain and potential hazard of their continued presence. Both the President and I opposed this proposition. My objections were ethical. His were practical. We were still talking about American soil, infested, yes, but hopefully one day to be liberated. The last thing we needed, he said, was to come up against one of these ex-cons as the new Grand High Emperor of Duluth. I thought he was joking, but later, as I saw the exact thing happen in other countries, as some exiled criminals rose to command their own isolated and in some cases powerful fiefdoms, I realized we'd dodged one hell of a speeding bullet. The work gangs were always an issue for us, politically, socially, even economically. But what other choice did we have for those who refused to play nice with others?